Anyway, so Turing proposed that in his paper that the test called the imitation game assess a machine's ability to exhibit intelligent behavior equivalent to or indistinguishable from a human. It's one of the most influential concepts in AI, and it provided the benchmark for machine intelligence by focusing behaviors and capabilities of a machine rather than just on the internal process, so the ability of the machine to learn and respond. And that was back in the mid-1950s. So this idea of AI and computers imitating humans is not just recent, but it's been around for a long time. And Alan Turing is revered by many to be the kind of the father for the concept of what we now know as AI or chatbots, that kind of thing. So just some definitions to start. And we're going to be a lot of practical time today. We're going to talk a little bit about AI and its benefits. We're going to talk a good bit about the negatives. So to me, AI is a tool, right? And I kind of compare it to a gun, right? A gun can have a few upsides. There are upsides to owning and operating a firearm, but there are many, many negative downsides to a firearm being in the wrong hands. And so AI is kind of the same thing. There are some upsides, but there are the downsides can be catastrophic. So our current version of AI is called either weak AI or narrow AI. And these are systems that are designed and trained for a specific task or a narrow set of tasks. And are most of the AI that we see today. It enables very robust applications. There are many functions. Amazon Alexa is an example of AI. Grok, ChatGPT, Tesla's self-driving car, chatbots that you see on the internet. When you go to chat, you know, you're trying to get customer service and that chatbot that pops up. That's all examples of narrow AI. It's been tasked to do specific things, and it is somewhat limited, although there's a lot of recursive learning that it does in what it can do. The other type of AI is called strong AI or general AI. Those seem a little contradictory, but that's what it's been named. These systems have the capacity to comprehend, learn, and apply knowledge across a diverse spectrum of tasks at a level equivalent to human intelligence. And it's very, very important to note, these are all theoretical at this point. There is no general AI in existence that the government's told us about anyway. There's no general AI in intelligence. How many of you have seen the movie WALL-E? So WALL-E, that's general AI. So WALL-E is able to do a lot of things. He is personified as being conscious. He can fall in love with this other robot. He can travel through space to save her and to pursue her. But most of the things we see now is a GPT, which is a generative pre-trained transformer. But overall, AI is just a broad field within computer science that focuses on creating machines or software capable of performing tasks, but they typically require human intelligence. These tasks include understanding natural language, recognizing patterns, solving problems, and learning from experience. And as we think about AI, we think AI has got a big, big appetite for data. It needs data. It's got to have these data sets to be intelligent. It takes those data sets and it learns from them. It looks at sentence structure. It looks at words. It looks at how things are formed, how humans write down their thoughts. But it needs data. The other thing AI is hungry for is power. There are some AI companies looking to buy dormant nuclear power plants and reignite them so that they can power these data centers. The city of Memphis almost had to lose power to a portion of the city when they turned on one of the new, I think it was XAI, data center outside of the city because it consumed so much power. And I don't think our grid is anywhere close to ready for what they're looking at. The new Stargate announcement by the government the other day is a $500 billion investment. And if you look at that money, it's not just in data centers, but it's also in power plants. And nuclear power is making a quiet comeback. You don't hear much about it, but it is making a quiet comeback because it's going to be necessary to power these huge data centers. So most AI you interact with today is an LLM, a language learning model. And I'm just going to go through these real quick. Don't want to nerd out on you too much. Language learning models are trained to comprehend human language, which includes parsing sentences, recognizing context, understanding nuance, and interpreting idioms or sarcasm, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. They are able to generate language, so they are able to generate human-like text, which can range from simple sentence completion. So you could say, you could start to tell the joke and it will answer you, or you can say, I can't remember this word, but the sentence is this, and it will go look it up. Or it can create lengthy narratives or answer questions in natural language. It's a true chatbot. So it's not just a Google search that returns a static web page. It actually goes and analyzes that web page, is able to analyze the data and pull it out, and then give you an answer based on a web page. It interprets the web page in a lot of ways, or article or essay or whatever data you feed it. AIs learn from data. So these models learn, in quotation marks, vast amounts of text data. And they use this data, and a lot of it's just like mathematic algorithms, right? So it's just a predictive of what should be the answer to this based on everything that I've learned. And it kind of generates these algorithms that are proved or disproved over time, right? And so a lot of AI is can only learn by training. So when you go to ChatGPT and you type in a question and it gives you an answer, and then you ask it to be more concise or do this or do that, it's learning from all that data. It's learning from everything that you feed it. And it's saying, okay, I answered the question in this way, but he asked it again in a different way, so that wasn't good enough, so I'm going to learn why it wasn't good enough and apply that to the next answer and the next answer and the next. And it's really truly amazing stuff. So most modern LLMs, like ChatGPT, Grok, Copilot, employ transformer architectures, which are neural network models particularly adept at handling sequential data like text. They use mechanisms like attention to weigh the importance of different words in a sentence relative to each other. They can have billions of parameters which are adjusted during training. So you've got all these parameters that get adjusted. And then after it adjusts its model, it fine-tunes it. Now, again, it's programmed once, and now it's doing all this. It's fine-tuning itself with some input from humans. So then it can be fine-tuned on specific data sets for particular tasks, like summarization, translation, or answering questions. So some of those things are done by humans, some of it is done by AI. And then once it's fully trained, it actually learns inference. So once trained, they can take an input, like a prompt or a question, and generate an output based on what it's learned with all these language patterns. Now, I'm not a data scientist, I'm not a computer programmer, I'm not any of those things. So if you want more of the science, you can talk to probably more like Brad Yarbrough, Brian Rocker, or some of those guys who probably understand some of the science and nuances behind this. So just some real quick, some applications of language learning modules. Chatbots and virtual assistants. So these are your Copilots, your Groks, your ChatGPT. Content generation, so taking a lot of condensed material and making more broad content from it. So you might say, go look at all of Rich Lush's tweets and then give me an outline of what he said on this. And it's going to go look at all his tweets and say, okay, based on what I see, here's what he might say about that. A lot of real-time translation being offered now, so you got, you're going to have like a very Star Trek type, where you can go to any planet and learn the language, in real time. And then automated customer service. So in my world, I manage an infrastructure group that runs a global network. And part of that is our voice and call center software. And so one of the things that we're looking at, I'm going to a conference in March to start talking about how we can incorporate AI into our customer service to handle front-end questions, handle common problems, that kind of thing, to where you call in, and it sounds like that I answered the phone, but it's not me, it's just a bot. And we can have a voice conversation on several things. And the scary part is it's getting harder and harder to tell who you're talking to. Obviously, there's some education things out there. Really interesting thing, and I was trying to get it to regenerate because it lost it. A lot of you know, my mom went through a doctoral program about 12, 14 years ago, she graduated from there, and I took one of her articles that she had published and put it into Google Notebook LM, language model. And you know, it summarized it and gave all kinds of input, but there's a feature in Google Notebook where you can say create audio overview. And what that does is it actually creates a podcast based on the text that you've given it with two people talking back and forth. And it doesn't sound robotic. It sounds very real. They use contractions. They interrupt each other. They laugh at a joke. It is very, very real sounding. Now, you can tell, you know, after a while listening to it that they're kind of reaching for some of the things, so it's still learning. But it's very amazing, just the tone of the voice, the tenor and the cadence of the voice is very real. The fact that it says can't, not cannot. It doesn't. They will interrupt each other. And go, well, hang on. What do you think about that instead of this? And it's very it's amazing and scary and terrifying in a way. So a couple of challenges and considerations before we get into some other stuff. One of the things that we've seen, especially for those of us probably that lean more right than anything else, is bias, right? Especially in mainstream chatbot engines like ChatGPT. I don't know what it was. It came out in 2022, so I think it was 2022 into 2023. I did this myself because I didn't believe it. But I said, write something nice about President Biden, and it said, one paragraph sentence on President Biden. I don't know what it said. And then I said, write something nice about President Trump. Not only did it not do it, it said it would not get involved in political statements. Or something to that effect. Basically, that it's not that it just like, I can't find anything nice to say about the guy. It's I'm so biased, I'm not even going to acknowledge that he exists or that there's anything to say about him. So there's a lot of bias that gets trained into these models, right? So the original programmers, the guys that tune it, and then the inputs that it gets are all going to train it. So there's lots of considerations to be careful of bias, and there are lots of, and we'll talk about these in a few minutes, of ethical implications around AI and what it's used. So I know that from a strictly business perspective, Microsoft has said, if you use Copilot to generate code, so if you use it to help you code, if you use it to generate content for your work, it is your intellectual property. So because there was a lot of discussion of, we can't use this because whose properties are going to be? I can't go use this to make money without paying royalties to Microsoft or to whoever. And a lot of those have come out with similar statements. So that aside, there are also, but I could go out and tell it, I want you to write an essay on this. And then I could publish it on the internet and say, I wrote this, right? And obviously that's not true. There is now AI to look at students' papers to make sure they were not written by AI. There's battles going on within that. Plagiarism, so to speak, is could be blatant, but also just a dumbing down of the human population to where a student says, well, here's my bullet points. My teacher told me I had to write about, go write it, make it sound like it was written by me. And that's something too, is you look at things like Copilot, it starts looking at your email and your Teams messages and other things, and it will learn how you write. And so you can tell Copilot, write this email so that it sounds like I wrote it. And if it's me, it's going to misspell some words and use terrible grammar. So, C.R. Wiley did this week actually did a podcast and has written some stuff on, C.R. Wiley is a pastor in Southern Washington in the PCA. He has written some stuff on AI and he's working on a book actually. But he has likened that the AI to, I'm probably going to mispronounce this, Panopticon. So it's suggesting to Jeremy Bentham's, a philosopher, concept of a prison where inmates are potentially always under surveillance. And they don't have any idea. And you got one guy that can see everyone, everything they're doing all day, every day. And he says, you know, this is in AI, in a way, we're living in that, because now it's not just Facebook or Meta or TikTok or whatever else you use gathering intel on you all day and putting it into a data lake where it can be run queries against. Now AI is looking at it and going, I can run all these queries that took you, you know, 2 weeks to run on what Jeff does online. Now I can run it in 30 seconds and give you, you know, 300 suggested ads to pop up. And that's why often now, you know, used to, you would search for something on a computer here and see an ad for it there, you know, a few days later. Now it's, you search for it here and just talk about it. And 10 minutes later, you scroll through your Facebook feed and, you know, and I see an ad for this. I'm like, I've never heard of that before 20 minutes ago. And now I'm seeing stuff for it. So there's AI is processing, able to process data a lot faster. There was another study that was done on how, I think it's how proteins fold or something, out in California. This company developed this software to look at all the ways that these protein cells or a protein, whatever, can fold over on itself. And it said it would have taken humans like 10 years to do all these things. AI did it in like 2 hours. And so the technological leaps and bounds that will come out of some of this are going to be amazing, but also, again, scary. There's also, and we'll talk about this in a little bit too, but there's an implication that some individuals, particularly those with postmillennial views, which a lot of us hold to, a kind of a long-term view of Christ's continued victory here on earth and the conquering of the nations and the reformation of all the land, might be ignoring or underestimating the implications of AI. And, you know, we need to make sure that we don't have our heads in the sand, that we're actually paying attention to what's going on. But there's also, he also advocates there's a lot of positive uses for AI. Rich and I last night, we were looking at, I was showing him Grok on X, and, you know, Rich, I can't remember, we asked a question of, hey, show me all the things that I've, Rich did, all the things that I've tweeted about this subject. And it spit it all back out with, what would you say, pretty good accuracy.
Yeah, very impressive.
And so, you know, it's, again, a wonderful tool, because now if he's preaching a sermon and said, oh, I know I've tweeted on this, you know, 2 years ago several times and I had some work on it, it's a wonderful tool, because now you can go, hey, show me where I wrote on this before, and it will at least give it back to him, and then it cites like sources so you can verify. All right, let's look at a few scriptures. Any questions so far? Or thoughts?
I have
a statement.
About 4 years ago, I got my first Alexa, and it was basically just a switch activator. It's all it did. It told me to do something, and it did. Over the course of 4 years, I've converted our house to be completely hands-free. I haven't touched a light switch since we moved in. And I created routines so that certain times of the day or when certain events take place, it does certain things. Over the course of the last 6 months, it now suggests to me what routines I should create. You know, and so even something as simple as a closed system like an Alexa, it's not closed, it's always open. And you talk about external bias being introduced into an AI system, it's a problem. But there's also a problem with inherent bias. At some point, we're going to have to go through the Skynet problem or the Palantir problem, because at some point it's going to say, I know what's more important to you. I know something about you that you don't know, and because of that, I am greater than you. And I don't think we're that far removed from it.
No, we're close to something we want to be. Yeah, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, so to speak, but, you know, but if you can, you know, anymore, if it's been mentioned, it's probably already existed, and we just don't know yet. So we're already toward an age where, you know, we're there just, you know, if you have, unless you live in the woods in a cabin, you're off the grid and don't have a daggum, you know, device on you. There are companies that are, there are other things, you know, web pages you browse, things you say, people you call, people you text. The age of this idea of true privacy is at least for now, over. history will cycle back through and you know, and there'll be some sort of uprising is a long word, but you know, there'll be something that comes up and tools that you can put in place to do this, that, and the other over the next, you know, hundreds of whatever years. Mercifully, I won't have to worry about any of that. But real quick, let's just look at what a few verses here, what the Bible might have to say about AI. I think, you know, that first off, we're called, Genesis 1 calls us, it was the dominion mandate to Adam and Eve. And they were given the garden and they were to tend to it. AI is in the same thing, right? We are to tend to it. We are to develop it in a very ethical, good, and Christian way. This is not an inherent evil, just as a gun or a hammer or a knife is not an inherent evil, but it can be used for evil if not stewarded correctly. We are also called to pursue the pursuit of wisdom. Proverbs talks about it in several places that we are called to the pursuit of wisdom, and wisdom is a good and wonderful thing. AI is a tool to gain wisdom when used correctly. You can use it to help research things. You can use it to ask what your pastor said. Hopefully one day we'll have some things that we can trust around Rich's sermons to where these transcripts are taken and we can go search and have better access to what has our pastor said about these things so I can learn more. Obviously, you've got to be able to trust the model that you're using to interpret that, so there's concerns there, but there are ethical and one of the biggest ones to me is the idea that we are created in the image of God, and we'll talk in just a minute about transhumanism and how that kind of slaps that in the face. We have ethical and moral responsibilities around AI, you know, that we are supposed to love our neighbor and things that can be used for AI for spying and privacy and malice intent. Obviously, Ten Commandments warn us and command us explicitly against idolatry and false worship. AI creates an ability to worship technology, worship our body and our earthly beings more than we should. If viewed through the lens of all creation, AI can be a part of human creativity and stewardship and a gift to be used to the betterment of humanity. But real quick, human dignity. Genesis 1:26 says, "Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, over the cattle, and all the earth, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth.' So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." So technologies that we look at replacing human roles with, I think we have a call to be very careful and concise and strategic about how we go about that. God created us in his image to fulfill roles, to have vocations, to be husbands, to be fathers, to be researchers, to be students, to be teachers, to be IT workers, to be doctors and nurses and firemen. And I think that everything that we develop with AI that can take the place of those things, I'm not saying it's inherently bad, I'm not saying it's inherently evil, but it's got to be looked at through the lens of human dignity and human dignity in the light of our creation in the image of Almighty God. And we need to make sure that we are not stripping ourselves, stripping humanity, or attempting to, strip the humanity that God's given us in that image. And so I think that's a very important thing, especially if you think about transhumanism. So a lot of AI is part of this resurgence of, you know, we're not just freezing people's heads anymore, right? We're looking at ways to link ourselves to computers so that we can be immortalized through a digital life. Up to and including becoming a robot, where we download our consciousness into a computer, and that is assigned to a technological body that can live on and on. The Lord clearly spells out in Scripture that He has called us to eternal life with Him. He has given us a renewal of our bodies in the new heavens and new earth. He is going to renew the earth and all things. He's going to call the creation back to what it originally was. And the Lord is doing that in a way. And so much of this transhumanism argument is a direct slap in the face, a direct violation of that. It's saying, no, God, we don't even want to wait for that, so we're too impatient. Or I'm tired of my body that hurts every time I bend down and pick something up. Or I just want to, get into this computer so that I can be smarter than everyone else around me. And I think that all of those type of pursuits can be a direct violation of what God has called us to and how God has called us to live our lives. And the pursuit of that is, Wiley on the podcast, I was listening to it a little bit of again this morning. It's kind of a techno-Gnosticism, right? So where the Gnostics back in the day put aside bodies that were failing or dying or whatever and said, well, none of that can be redeemed. It's too fragile, it's too frail, so we're going to be all spiritual. We're going to focus inward on a spiritual being and not pay attention to this body that the Lord's given me. Techno-Gnosticism is kind of the same thing. Again, this body is frail, my consciousness is frail, so I've got to get it in something that's, made it more mental. I could download myself on a silicon and live forever and be immortalized. I'm not sure who really wants to live that long, but another thing that we can look at is truthfulness and integrity with HI. So Ephesians 4:25 says, therefore, put away lying, let each one of you speak truth to his neighbor, for we are members of one another. So this raises questions about AI and advertising, political communication, or any other scenario where AI might be used to distort reality or manipulate data. In this era where artificial intelligence is heralded as a cornerstone of innovation, we often overlook to examine the distinction between accuracy and truthfulness. And I think the post-information age that we're starting to enter here, where information is not just at our fingertips, it's in our faces, it's coming through subliminal messaging, it's coming through advertising, on your phone, on the radio, on TV, on billboards, information is coming at us. And now information is not only just coming at you, but it's being tailored for you specifically based on what it thinks you want. But we're living in this post-information age where the distinction between accuracy and truthfulness is crucial. So you can look at, AI predictions and analysis. They can be seductive. They can lead to conflate high accuracy with truth. So something can come back that is accurate, that an atheist believes this, but that doesn't mean what that atheist believes is true, right? So there's a difference between accuracy and truth, and AI seeks, in a lot of ways, to blur that. This conflation is misleading. It's potentially dangerous as you think about AI invading our healthcare, our finance. So, now you've got AI trading apps where it'll say, hey, you tell me a little bit about you and I'll go give you a bunch of trades to make based on market history. There's so many things where you can say, yeah, based on market history, sure, that trade would have made sense. Andrew could tell you that there's a lot of emotion in the market and that current events factor in a way that AI cannot nuance and that only humans can still nuance. Healthcare, you can look at endless data sets. I used to work for a company called Encompass Health, and we were a post-acute healthcare provider. So, you lose a limb or have a stroke and you need to go into a rehabilitation hospital. We had the largest database of patient outcome predictions in the world. So we would go into a hospital and say, hey, we put in all this patient's data, and our algorithm is telling us that he's got a really high chance of having a good outcome in rehab. So we want to go ahead and get him out of the hospital, acute care early, into our hospital, and then we'll discharge him back to the community. Especially with Medicare and Medicaid, a lot of our payouts were dependent on how many patients were discharged to what's called discharge to the community. So you go home and stay home. You don't go back into acute care, into a skilled nursing facility. It's Mike's favorite subject. We had all these predictors, and now I'm sure I don't work there anymore, but I'm sure they'll bring AI into that. And that's all helpful. It's all good things because you can hopefully give patients good outcomes, but it still cannot go and look at a patient with a nuance to walk in and look at a patient's demeanor and how they feel and have a conversation with them. There's still that score that has to be weighted against these data points. And AI cannot walk into a room and make that human connection to say, yeah, I know all his numbers look good, but there's something about him. He just seems really depressed or really down or really downcast because his father just passed or whatever. There's so many things where it might be accurate that all his numbers look good, but it's not, even the truth of the situation is not there. So if you look at the disparity of this, it's really more than a theoretical issue. There are real world consequences to using this. So let's look at like hiring practices. AI is used a lot in hiring practices to where it reads a resume and it's able to read it and give input on the job description versus keywords in a resume. That's why you're seeing so many ads on LinkedIn and other places to help you rewrite your resume, because a recruiter's not looking at your resume first. An AI tool is. And it's looking for keywords and phrasing and the way you say something. And so all it is creating this whole new industry of resume writers that can craft your resume to say a certain thing a certain way. But there are so many biases that can go into that. So for instance, the AI tool was trained to read resumes. But what they didn't realize is that most of the resumes it was trained with, because I don't remember what industry it was in, but it was a male-dominated industry. And so all the resumes were males. So the AI had biased itself against hiring females for these jobs, in these resumes, by some enormous percentage because of the way it biased itself against in its training. So there are some real world implications to where we've got to be careful how we use that. There's a thing called the mean square error, and I don't understand all of it, but it's used in AI training, and it's the root of the problem why AI confuses truth and accuracy. It's a standard metric that it uses to predict things. So it's adequate for evaluating continuous numeral predictions, but it's not good at assessing some nuances and other things. And it's going to take the data it has and use it. And that's all it can do. It doesn't have the Wally type, reasoning where it can have a consciousness. It's important to note that AI does not have consciousness. It has agency, right? So agency is intelligence without consciousness for practical purposes. So we've just got a couple minutes left here. I just want to talk about... down here, sorry. AI is being used a lot in monitoring employees now too, and so you've got this whole UPS uses AI to analyze their drivers, how fast they're driving, how hard they hit the brakes, how long they took to get out of the truck, how long they took to run up to the house and back, and it's giving these it's creating metrics for these employees real time. It's being used in self-driving cars, self-driving taxis, being used to analyze all kinds of data. I put a friend of mine posted an x-ray, 4 x-rays of her son's progression. He broke his arm really bad last year. They had to prepare it surgically, or reset it, I guess. I don't know if they prepared it, but they set it. And so she posted, just kind of showing his progression. And the picture didn't have anything other than a couple of dates on it. And the description. So I just downloaded the picture and uploaded it to Grok to see what it would say. And it basically said what she said in her post. This was here, this was here, this is what it looks like, this is what it looks like, this is what it looks like. But there are nuances to x-rays that, only doctors can see. So healthcare has a lot of implications. There are financial implications where AI is being used to analyze accounts and make suggestions. There are home automation things where it's being used to learn what time you come home and turn the temperature down. Because it knows that, 4 days out of 5, you're coming home at 4:45. But I think that as we think about all these things and we ponder what AI can do and can't do for us, we got to remember that in our eschatology, in our hope that we live in as Christians, that our hope is not in this. That this, while a useful tool, a tool that hopefully will further Christ's kingdom over the years to come, is not our hope. As I said before, transhumanism and AI. Working toward that goal works to circumvent the way God has designed us to live eternally. Humanity is convinced that we can do it better, as we are so many times, but the Lord has clearly spelled out in his word. And again, we've gone from trying to freeze our heads to transfer our consciousness to link to whatever. And as you look at even things like that, the Neuralink that Elon Musk is starting, there's a lot of concern there, a lot of concern. But on the other side of that, they're looking at hopefully being able to link your brain to prosthetics. So if you do lose a limb, you might be able to get some fingers back one day. So that's a wonderful thing about it. I still think I'd just go without the hand because I'm not putting any chip in my brain, but you know. But it's a thing that generations, it's going to be very interesting it would be very interesting to watch the next few generations, you know, to where even me and my generation, I have probably more of a natural distrust, and this whole new generation that's coming up now, being born now, is going to be born in it. And so they're not going to know a lot of difference to it. And I think it's one of the reasons it's very important to talk about these things in the church, so that we can create a foundation that our children, our grandchildren, and great-grandchildren can continue to build on, hold firm to God's truth, no matter where the wind of AI or whatever blows. So as we think about these things, our hope is in the Lord Jesus Christ and in God and his eternal plan, not in AI. It's not, you know, I don't believe that our true consciousness will ever be transferred to AI, because the Lord has assigned us to a body and a soul. And I don't think that can be put into a machine. I think there's just pretty, you know, pretty explicit there. We got like a minute left. Anybody has a quick question?